Hello everybody, and welcome to another episode. In this episode, we're going to talk about Asterisk, the open source PBX server. I'm Mark Clark, I'm from South Africa, and I'm an open source developer and solution provider. I'm joined by Darlene from Canada. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, Mark. How are you this week?
All right, thanks.
Well, just maybe we can start with, you know, what Asterisk is, per se.
Okay.
Mark, would you like to start with that?
Yeah, let me do that. Asterisk, as I said in the beginning, is a open source telephony server. It's also called a VoIP server or IP PBX, and essentially it is an open source server in both in terms of its source code, but also that it runs on standard or generic hardware, which anybody can implement, which therefore makes it quite a disruptive technology in the PBX or telephony market, where it's very much a proprietary type of solution that normally gets provided there. So it's very exciting and it's disrupting that whole industry, and a lot of companies are switching to it to save costs and increase productivity. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of benefits to using Asterisk in business. I'm sure you've come across them, Darlene, and you use Asterisk.
Yes. So in my company, we use an Asterisk box. We've been using it for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And some of the benefits that we found were that we weren't reliant on outside sources, like a telco, for any enhancements or management we needed of our services. Mm-hmm. And we also have some redundancy built into our system then, because we do have some copper lines coming in, and then we move into the Asterisk box. As well, we found it was very cost effective, you know, compared to the traditional models that are offered by our telco, because it seems business rates are three times what anything residential would be.
Okay.
And as well, as a small business, it allowed us to expand our phone capacity with VoIP lines along with our copper lines.
Mm-hmm.
So we found just, and again, that, you know, there were 99% of the features that we wanted, but we were able to code the rest that we wanted, because once we learned more about Asterisk, we got more adventurous.
Yeah. Now, that's the thing for you, is Asterisk, it's extensible. You know, and it's extensible in the sense that if you decide to add more lines to your box, you can just pop it open and put in new cards. Or if your box, you need a bigger box to run Asterisk on, you can still reuse the hardware in a new box. So that's extensible in that sense, which obviously saves money and time. And then also it's extensible, as you say, from a software sense, because it's got a well-defined API that you can then use to integrate into your applications in your office, or any third-party application can take advantage of it, and it's documented as well. You know, you don't have to sort of pay some guy tons of money just to do the integration for you.
Right. Okay. So do you want to talk a little bit about what we felt with the hardware requirements to set up an Asterisk box in your office?
Yeah, typically, I mean, we do quite a few Asterisk installations, all the way from small offices, SME type of PBXs, all the way to call centers, like 20 to 50 seat call centers with Asterisk. So it's very versatile and flexible. What you do find is that its hardware requirements are actually quite minimal. The main bottleneck is normally the CPU, because of all the codex translations that it has to do. It requires a bit of CPU, but this memory and doesn't have to be that much. You can get about 500 megs of RAM. Specifically, you have a gig, it's gig RAM in there to do all of the, to handle all the calls and everything. And the hard disk, really, that depends on how much recording you want to do. Because if you're not going to do any voice recordings, any voicemail and stuff like that, you don't really need big hard disks. You can even use smaller disks if you're going to sort of archive the call centers that you record all of the conversations, in cases of dispute later and all of those things. And you just archive it off in the evenings to another machine. So it's actually quite modest what its requirements need to be. You don't need to go and spend, a ton of money on the actual hardware. But typically, the expensive hardware is the actual cards that you use when you integrate into the PSTN networks. So, for example, like Digim, the guys that actually, develop Asterisk, they make hardware cards that you can use to interface with the PSTN networks. You know, both the BRR for the ISDN lines and the PRR ISDN line cards. And those tend to be quite expensive compared to, that's actually normally the most expensive piece of hardware that you have in the Asterisk box. Apart from that, it's normally quite modest.
Okay.
What have you, in your experience, what have you used?
Well, we use the Digim cards. We actually don't use any aftermarket cards. We order it from Digim. Mm-hmm. But I thought we could also talk about the other hardware that goes along with this, is the SIP phones. Whether we want people like to use the soft phones on their computer, on their PC, mm-hmm. or do they realize that they can't use a regular phone any longer, that they have to invest into a SIP phone, such as a Polycom or a Grandstream. Do you have any comments on that, Mark? Well, just that the cost can vary quite a bit, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, from my experience, the Grandstream mm-hmm. were very cost effective, and we use them in our office. I think I've had some feedback from myself that maybe their life expectancy wasn't that great,
mm-hmm.
but we also use the Polycoms.
Okay.
And I really like it. I actually have a Linksys mm-hmm. phone that I use, and actually it's probably the better models I've come across.
Okay. No, look, most of the call centers tend to use the soft phones because they're cheaper and they're cost-effective. And already they've got computers for all the agents, so they try and cut costs like that. But, I mean, you know, it's sort of what you penny-wise, but pound foolish, as it were. Because what happens is often with the soft phones is people change the configurations. There's a lot of support issues around that, especially if you've got people that are not too technical. And typically, you know, call center agents aren't too technical. So they change the settings on the phone, and then next minute it's all kinds of problems. There's also irritation because, you know, typically the PBX gets blamed for these problems when it's actually, you know, client-side and the system administrator hasn't locked down the machines properly. So they set up the phones, the soft phones wrong, and it gets problems. So hard phones are typically better at that because then they, you know, they look like phones. People don't mess with them that much and change their settings. So mm-hmm. hard phones are good from that point of view. But as you say, they're horrendously expensive. I mean, the Grandstream, which are the cheapest sort of hard phones that we found, what we find is that they last about a year and then they break. So, you know, you pay all that money for a phone and it doesn't work after a year.
Mm-hmm.
And on the higher end, in South Africa, what's very popular are the SNUM phones. Just like everywhere you go, people use the SNUM phones. And, you know, sometimes using the people pay for the SNUM phones, especially in bigger installations, because you can do automatic provisioning of those phones. So if you have an installation with 300 phones, you know, you don't really have to go to each phone and set up individually because that'll be painful. So you have like a central server that will automatically push out the settings to, just like, you know, almost like a DHCP service pushes out the settings to workstations, so this pushes out to the phones. So yeah, so I do think that the hardware there, in terms of the phone side, can be quite expensive. One potential middle ground is to, especially if you've got a client that's already got a PBX system that you're replacing, it's not an IP PBX system you're replacing, you can use the existing phones, the analog phones, by buying these ATA adapters, and essentially they plug into that. So the ATA adapter is still quite expensive, but that's cheaper than the Grandstream phones. So you can reuse those older phones on the system. So that's also something to consider when you're doing that. So the main thing I think is you know, talking about like how to install Asterix. What have you guys used mm-hmm. in your office to install Asterix?
Well, we had Asterix back in the day, so mm-hmm. we did all of our stuff by coding. There wasn't a CD or a GUI install. We did it by command line coding.
Source install.
And it was mm-hmm. yeah. So it was quite a bit of work, and we were actually just discussing today. We were thinking of having a redundant box, moving to newer hardware, mm-hmm. and how we were going to do this. And I had suggested that we should look at Elastic and do it with a CD install this time. But we still find it's going to be, well, I'll let you talk a little bit more before I go into the, you know, the other side of installation, and that's the configurations.
Okay. Yeah, I'm installing a few years ago, not that long ago really. you know, most installations are done from source because the Asterix code base is moving so fast, and if you really wanted to get all the bugs sorted, you have to install from source. Nowadays, most distributions have Asterix in their repositories, so you can just do apt-get or yum install. And as you were saying, there's all these dedicated distributions to Asterix now. So there's still, I know of Elastic is the one. We tend to use Elastic for SME markets and stuff. And then there's Trickbox. Trickbox, the problem with them is they seem to have got like this commercial side to them now, which I think is basically alienating the community. And then there's also Digium started one now as well called Asterix Now, which I haven't tried myself because it was being in beta until I think recently. Actually, I must just check if it's still in beta or if it's out. But yeah, it was in beta. We haven't really used it. But what we do on the call center side, typically where configurations are quite simple, because if it's a call center, I mean, I know people hate call centers, you know, because they're always phoning people and annoying them and stuff like that. But, you know, there's a lot of work in South Africa with call centers. Typically there you don't need a GUI, because it's not like a fancy lot of commands that you need. It's just either an outgoing campaign or incoming campaign. So it's quite simple. But, you know, so we tend to just use a distribution like Ubuntu or CentOS, and we just install it from the repositories, because then we can do it without the GUI tools. Because, you know, we're going on to into configuration just now, but sometimes those tools can make things complicated underneath. So, yeah, I don't know if you want to talk about what tools you use to configure Asterisk at all.
No, actually, I don't have too much insight. I did talk, you know, we were also today as a reviewing our plan forward, just talking about codecs.
Okay.
And I understand, yeah. So we're looking at some. I guess there's some that you pay for the codecs per line. Are you familiar with that, Mark?
Yeah, the thing is that there's a lot of free codecs out there that you can use.
Yes.
So it's okay to use like ULAW and ALAW on your local network. But when you start going over a VoIP trunk, you need to use a codec that does a high rate of compression. A compression sort of quality trade-off, and unfortunately the main one there is the G729 codecs, which is patented, so you have to buy licenses whenever you use it, so you need one for every trunk that you're going to have for that. It's a bit annoying as well, because typically you need one on the server side and on the client side, and that's one thing. A lot of these like hard phones come with a codec already, you know, you already buy the codecs in the phone, the G729's on it. But if you try and like root over your internet connection with a code, it's not G729, often your trunk, your VoIP provider will just reject the call. Also, if you try anything else, you normally have voice quality issues and that, because the compression and the frame rates and, you know, all that translation between TCP, IP and all of the voice translation that starts having a negative impact on the quality of the call. So yeah, so it's not horrendously expensive. I think it's like I think it's $10 or something like that, for one or something. So, you know, it's not too expensive. It's not a significant cost, put it that way. And hopefully, of course, the open source community manages to come up with something that can replace it in the long run.
Okay. But I just wanted to bring that up, because it is part of, you know, some considerations on installation and configuration. Okay, so we were going to talk. Go ahead, Mark.
No, I was going to say, especially with the often what you find happening is people set up their VoIP trunk and nothing works and they don't know why. It's because you need to configure the Asterisk box to actually use the codec, and you have to install the codec as well. You know, so these guys have the phone sending it in the wrong, encoded in the wrong format, and then of course it gets rejected at the VoIP provider and they don't know why. So yeah, so often that can be an issue for troubleshooting as well. People are not aware of that.
Okay. All right. Okay. So let's move on a little bit here, and we'll just talk about configuration of the system, and we're going to talk about dial plans or PBXs. Go ahead, Mark.
PBX. I think the issue is that there's two ways to configure Asterisk. There's using like a GUI tool and using a command line tool. You know, to configure it. Have you used FreePBX before as a command line? I mean, as a GUI tool to configure Asterisk, or at your office, or not? Or do you tend to do it editing the dial plan manually?
Yeah, we tend to do it manually. So because we have that Linux background, so we're comfortable with the command line. So depending on who is doing the configuration, right? But for us, we're comfortable with the command line.
Yeah, the command line is often obviously the most flexible way of doing it. But the GUI tools, what they do enable FreePBX. I mean, for me, there's a trade-off. FreePBX is great because you can quickly set up a complex dial plan, you know, with follow me's and RVRs and voicemails by just clicking a few buttons. However, the negative trade-off with that is that, you know, FreePBX tends to have be undocumented, and from my experience, on all of its macros and its modules and all its different scripts that it uses. So as soon as you want to customize it manually, you're in for a world of pain. Because you change it, and every time you do the changes, your changes get overwritten by FreePBX. So, you know, it's a cost-benefit thing. So if you're going to put in an installation where the client's going to try and do their own little bit of administration, adding extensions and that kind of stuff, it's best to use FreeVPX. But if you're going to have an installation you have complete control over, sometimes better just to use a command line like you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just, yeah. you just have less hassles in the long run with it. So, yeah.
All right. So, now I understand that you can, we configure with SIP. Now, can you talk about some of the other ways of configuring Asterisk? Like, not everybody uses SIP connections or SIP setup, right?
I'm only really familiar with the SIP side of things. I mean, the SIP is just this protocol that uses to initiate the calls and do all the signaling and all of that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So SIP, I mean, is a protocol which is actually independent of Asterisk. It's not necessarily just Asterisk.
Right.
People can use SIP for all kinds of things, like I'm setting up video conferences and all this. So, yeah, so it's quite, apparently from, you know, I'm not a SIP expert at all, but apparently it's a very complicated protocol.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Right. So are there any other protocols that you're aware of?
Well, put it this way, we're talking about the IAX protocol, which is the Asterisk own protocol for sending data between, like, web servers. So you can, like, let's say you have an office, because typically also we web can cut a lot of costs in business and stuff. It's like if you have an office, head office, and you have regional offices, and then the regional offices, you know, have a VoIP server and they can connect over the internet to head office for calls. And typically then what will happen is, you know, the between the two servers, you have to have like a trunk. And you can use, if they're both Asterisk servers, you can use the AIX protocol for that, which is a very efficient protocol actually for communications between VoIP servers. So yeah, so you can use it. And I think there is a move afoot to make it a standard as well, so that it'll become like a telephony standard. And it does do a lot of the stuff that the SIP does as well, in terms of setting up calls and initiating them and those kind of things. So yeah, so I haven't worked a lot with the AIX protocol myself. You know, because typically most of the work we do tends to be connecting offices to the PSTN network, and then obviously they won't.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just use the PSTN configurations there to talk to the PSTN network. So I suppose, you know, just to reiterate the thing about FreeVPX, it's a great tool to do the configuration, but you know, if you have to then customize that code afterwards, you'll be wading through source code for a long time. Well, when you set up your channels, typically you assign numbers to the channel, so you can, for example, if you have you know, like you have an international call line or something, you have another line which, you know, which connects to the, let's say, typically what happens in some places, yeah, in South Africa, you have what's called PEMI cells, which are using for connecting to your cell phone network, so you can do least cost routing across, you know, depending on what call number you're calling. If you're calling a cell phone, it'll route it across the cell phone network and not across the landline network. And so then each of those trunks, these channels, have a different number, so you can route the call across that channel. But typically what, in most cases, what you just do is, you just, like if you've got a PRI line, you just assign it all to one group, and then you just, you know, whatever channel's available, it's just automatically select and send it across that channel in the trunks. Yeah. I think.
All right, so... Do we want to talk anything about, I guess this could fit into troubleshooting. Do we want to talk anything about the voice quality, you know, the quality of the network that might be underneath, anything about latency that can be caused by packets? I know that here in our office that when people first come in, new hires that aren't quite familiar with our network, we find that there's a bit of latency, especially when we call into mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
There's while it's negotiating at first, that there's quite a delay,
mm-hmm.
and you think that the call didn't work, and mm-hmm. you wait. And I think you and I had talked about mm-hmm. how you can actually program where the ringtone kicks in sooner, so people will be somewhat tricked, or they think that they may be already connecting, just to make up for the latency. And as well, I think we should talk or stress to people listening that the quality of your network underneath all of this
mm-hmm.
also can affect, so you think it's the Asterisk box that's causing you the problems. It could be bad cabling in the office, you know, it could be switches, it could be a number of things. And, you know, so sometimes you have to trace it back a little bit further than just the Asterisk installation.
Yeah, look, that's an important point because, you know, especially if you on your local network, if it's a busy network and it's already at capacity and you're going to put VoIP traffic on there, you're going to have problems. And also, besides your local network, often where a lot of problems come in is that people think, you know, that they can just do VoIP routing over the internet with their VoIP provider over ADSL LAN. And the biggest problem you have with ADSL LAN is that its download speed might be great, but its upload speed is normally a fraction of its download speed. And that's the biggest bottleneck. So typically, yeah, in South Africa, you get these 4 meg ADSL LANs, and your down speed is, I think, 512K. And on that, you can probably only have two simultaneous calls through that internet connection. And that's only if you've got nothing else happening on the internet, like people downloading stuff and that. So, you know, you do need quite a decent, if you're going to do a lot of, like, let's say you've got a 30 calls, seat call center, you know, you're going to need a pretty big pipe to the internet to be able to handle all of those calls if you're going through a VoIP provider cleanly. And that's also why in South Africa there's not a lot of, you know, we don't use VoIP that much because bandwidth here is very expensive. You know, hopefully prices will come down in this next year with all these cables being laid and stuff. But yeah, it's very expensive, so people typically just integrate with a PSTN network. Or even in some cases, right, in these call centers, they just get what they call SIM banks, and essentially they're just these big banks filled with, like, you know, 50 SIM cards, and it just routes all the calls over there. Because obviously, I mean, most call centers tend to call cell phones before they call the landlines. So yeah, so they do a lot of integration with the SIM banks. And also, I think what's important as well, you know, you're talking about sort of when you're planning on doing an Asterisk installation, is to manage people's expectations around the calls, because you know the VoIP call quality sometimes can be a little bit less than on your traditional network. And typically, we don't have a strong management team that's backing the installation process. You know, people just with any change, they're always going to resist it, and always going to find something to complain about. So yeah, it's important that people sort of, you know, as with normal change management stuff, you know, you have to have a strong management commitment, upper management commitment to getting the system in place and getting people to use it, because people tend to try and find all kinds of problems with the system when actually, you know, in my experience, Asterisk is very robust. And hardly ever goes any hassles at all. Typically, when problems are brought up, they're actually sitting on the client side. So it's either, as you say, the network has a problem, or the SIP phone hasn't been set up properly, stuff like that, or the ADSL connection, or the breakout internet isn't adequate enough to actually, you know, service all the calls that they're making.
Right, and I think too, I don't know if we talked about planning. I think having a good IT plan, a good telephony plan in place is good, and then you can plan when you're doing the installation, the initial installation, what do you plan to do in the future to make sure you have, you know, the equipment that you can expand with, make sure that you do, you know, especially if you hire someone to come in at the beginning to do your installation for you, you know, to make sure that you talk about, am I going to have ring groups? Do I need an IVR? Will I ever use Follow Me? You know, do I need time conditions? You know, those ring groups are only available from 9 to 5. You know, these kind of things, extension to cell phones, you know, think forward thinking about what your sales force or your staff is going to require.
Yeah,
do you agree with that, Mark?
Yeah, I do. And especially that's quite important in the sense that often actually setting up the Asterisk box itself or just installing the base server isn't that time-consuming, but it's doing the actual dial plan and the configuring that's important, you know. I mean, you can set all these things up and then somebody says, oh, we also need a dial group for X, and that could, like, mess up your whole plan. I mean, you have to redo a whole lot of work. So it's important to plan up front, you know, what's going to be done and used. And that's also what often people don't put into their budgets, you know, when they're planning these things. They just think, because in my experience, what happens with most people where they get involved with Asterisk, you know, they sit at home, they get an Asterisk distro like Elastic, they install it on their machine, they don't have to integrate with the PSTN network, which is where a lot of your problems lie. Because I promise you now, the biggest issue is often getting the right drivers, getting the right configuration in Asterisk to talk to the PSTN network. And if you don't have that set up properly, it's not going to work. And many of these guys, in the sort of testing, will only test the VoIP functionality. And it's actually quite trivial to set up. And so they assume that the rest of it's going to be just as trivial, and it's not. So you need to sort of, you know, people need to know that you budget for that kind of stuff. Then you budget for the time that's involved in troubleshooting those issues. Because if you just look, you know, if you look on the internet and the forums, you'll just see that that is by far where the vast majority of issues lie, is if the Astro doesn't pick up the card when you install it.
Right. Okay. And did we touch anything on about having a hosted solution, like where somebody has a remote installation of Asterix instead of a hardware solution on site? Have you heard of people doing that at all in your market, Mark?
No, not really in South Africa because once again the bandwidth costs. But what I do know you can do, and this is also where Asterix is also being used a lot now, is in sort of telecommuting to work. Not so much in South Africa. But I've read about it overseas, where, you know, because what's nice about it, as you say, your extension can actually be anywhere. So you can have an extension, if you've got a decent internet connection on the other side of the world, which will ring when somebody phones in. So typically now you have people working from home, they just set up their SIP phone at home to connect to the server sitting at the office, and when somebody, you know, they sell their phone sales and they get transferred through, it'll actually ring on their home phone. And so that's quite a handy feature.
Actually, now that you mention that, I'm actually starting to work at home more, so that might be an attractive feature for me to go get one of our spare phones and set it up at home so that my extension, because I was actually considering having it sent to my cell phone, but here in North America, our cell charges, it's kind of reversed. You guys have expensive bandwidth for your internet, but you have pretty cheap mobile phones, and in North America, we have cheap bandwidth. But our cell phones are very expensive, daytime minutes. So that would be an advantage for me to have that SIP phone here at home and forward it. So I think I'm going to explore that option myself.
One thing, you know, we also were looking at our office at one stage. The only thing that did cross our mind is you want to make sure that PBX has to be exposed to the internet. So just make sure there's no PSDN trunks available on there, because if you get hacked, next minute you will have a phone bill with all the phone calls to Russia or China. So it's best to make sure that the PBX that's sitting in your DMZ that people will be connecting to doesn't have any PSDN connections to it, and just use it to route between your one on your green network, I suppose, and it connects to the PSDN network and the box in the DMZ. So I think it's something you have to be careful of there.
All right. So, was there anything else that we wanted to touch on today, Mark? Do we want to talk about challenges of any integration with other systems, or?
Yeah, I think there's two things I'd love to talk about. One is just quickly on the ISDN side of Asterix in terms of the hardware there, because that's an experience that's been where the most pain is experienced, because you've got BRI and PRI ISDN, and in the past Asterix there were two problems actually. The Linux kernel. It was using ISDN for Linux, and it didn't support a whole lot of ISDN cards. And so you had to patch that at some stages to get it to work, especially with the BRI cards. And at the same time, the library within Asterix called libPRI that handles connections to the PRI ISDN lines couldn't support BRI lines. So if you had a BRI card, you had a problem where you had to patch, libPRI to support it. And that was quite a manual process, and also it would break. You couldn't then have a BRI card and PRI card in the same box. And then what confuses the situation even more is that what you can do to solve the problem is just actually replace the kernel ISDN driver with what's called MISDN driver. So when you replace that in the kernel, then all your BRI cards and your PRI cards will work without having to patch Asterix. But what you would have to do is you have to use a different, what they call module in Asterix, a channel that handles the channels, sets up the channels with the ISDN lines. So, you know, if you look on the internet and people have these problems, it's very confusing what you're reading, what solution people are putting in place to try and deal with the problem, and also what version of Asterix, because Asterix, you know, later version of Asterix actually supported BRI cards natively. You don't have to patch them anymore. And so that can be a lot of confusion for people that are new to Asterix. I mean, especially for small businesses, because typically small businesses will use a BRI card, a basic rate ISDN card. And you install that, and that's when you have like a lot of problems. But hopefully now that's behind us. I think a lot of the distributions, like especially Elastic, for example, use MISDN kernel modules by default, and the ISDN MISDN driver is within Asterix itself. So it's getting a lot better. A lot of the pain is disappearing out of the system there.
All right. And you said there was one other thing you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, the other thing would be around, you know, what I find is if you have to integrate with existing PBXs, you know, there's two worlds. Like, we're coming from the RT world into the telephony world, and the telephony world has its own, you know, acronyms and protocols and stuff, which, you know, isn't really, it's a whole new field that you have to get into. And what I find is normally a bit of animosity from the traditional telephony side of technicians and stuff towards Asterix and open source stuff. So sometimes one of the biggest challenges is actually working with them and getting them to cooperate with you. You know, we find that, you know, often in trying to integrate to their system, like with these SIM banks, for example, and something's not working, they'll blame Asterix for the problem. And it turns out that, you know, they've got it misconfigured on their SIM bank. You know, it'll be silly things like, for example, in their SIM bank, they might only have four SIM cards for one provider, like let's say in South Africa to be MTN, and then they have four for the other provider, Vodacom, and they program the SIM bank to do the least cost routing, and it says, okay, send all MTN calls over the MTN SIMs and all Vodacom calls over the Vodacom SIMs, and then the call center starts dialing, because they don't randomize the numbers, let's say, and it'll start dialing 10 or 8 MTN numbers at the same time. And so what happens is, obviously, after the four MTN numbers are rerouted, people start getting channel unavailable responses from the SIM bank. And people say, oh, well, look, you know, Asterix is dropping these calls. And it's not the case. It's because the SIM bank's been misconfigured. But often you have to actually fight with the technician that supports the SIM bank to tell them, look, this is the problem. So I often find that is a bit of a challenge as well. You know, and also, obviously, the providers like the Siemens and all these other guys, they're quite... You know, IPPBXs like Asterix, open source ones, are very disruptive to their business. So they're not very keen on integrating with them.
It's protectionism, protectionism, right? So yeah, they're just trying to guard their own interests. So yeah, I guess
That's bizarre. Ahead, I mean, I've heard, like, you know, we've gone up against quotes where like these proprietary guys are quoted over 400,000 rand for a system. And, you know, we think we're overcharging it, you know, at 50,000 Rand for an Asterix system. So, you know, it really is a classic example, basically, of how open standards can disrupt essentially a proprietary industry. That's why Asterix is, you know, really is catching on, like, you know, in South Africa quite a lot.
And, you know, I think with these economic challenging times, that, you know, even here in North America, where we're so fixated on the telcos, that it will become a viable option. I know that I've been working with some nonprofit organizations that, you know, this is a very attractive solution to them. And honestly, as an IT person, I think the best, you know, you talked about how people resist change and you need support for management. And, you know, the management support is good if you do run into problems. Mm-hmm. But I think an ideal solution or an ideal installation is when they don't even realize they've changed, you know, where everything's gone smoothly. They started using the phones the next morning, like you came in over the weekend or something to do the install, and next, you know, their calls are coming through, their extensions are working, their voicemails are working. There's nothing, you know, where they don't have to change their routine. You know, I know that sometimes you have to change how you get your voicemail, but ideally, you know,
it should be transparent. I would think.
Transparent installation. All right. Was there anything else you wanted to share, Mark?
I just think that, you know, VoIP is going mainstream now, because when it came out a few years ago, in South Africa, everybody hates the telephone company because it used to be a government monopoly, and then they privatized, and basically prices remained stubbornly high despite poor service. So everybody was really keen to do anything they can to get away from these guys. So when VoIP first came out, everybody was keen to jump on the bandwagon. And, you know, it was a bit of the hype phase of VoIP. And I think a lot of people had some negative experiences there, particularly around things like call quality. And in South Africa, it's predominantly related to, as I've been saying, you know, the bandwidth that you can get over it. But I think now it's gone into the mainstream phase. The technology settled down. More bandwidth is coming on board. And we see more and more people actually adopting Asterix now, and, you know, in particular in South Africa as well, I think, you know, the VoIP stuff hasn't really taken off that well, but mainly on the integration to the PSTN network. So it looks like, you know, once again, open source software is making a difference in a proprietary world.
Right. And, you know, in North America, we actually have embraced VoIP lines, mm-hmm. and it is very transparent. You would know most times that mm-hmm. you were on VoIP. A lot of businesses, employ that. And it's even making its way into residential. But, yeah, like you said, though, at the beginning, people jumped on it. There were call quality issues. Mm-hmm. There were, issues about 911 calling, not realizing you're sharing the network when you're used to a dedicated copper line. And I don't know if we touched on it earlier, but like with our office, we have a mixed environment. We have four copper lines coming in, then it turns to VoIP inside our office, and we go from there. And when we go out through VoIP.
Yeah, that's a common configuration that you don't want to change, especially if businesses have been around for a long time. They don't want to lose their numbers that have been published and they spent all that money doing business calls and letterheads and all advertising in there. So you need to keep the copper lines for incoming calls and then they route over the VoIP line. Because, one of the advantages of VoIP, which I don't think we talked about, is that, really it can do it does all your least cost routing for you. So the VoIP provider goes out, finds the cheapest, puts all the infrastructure in place, does the cheapest routing, so cell phones get routed over the cell phone networks, etc. The landlines are the landlines, and international calls get routed by the cheapest possible route. So that's also why they're quite a big threat to the telephone company as well, because now, in fact, in South Africa, for our telephone company here, tried to go to court because they claimed that least cost routing was banned by law because they were the only guys who were allowed to do it. So it's it really is a technology that is disruptive to both the telcos and to the providers of the hardware and the PBXs.
Well, it's a whole new world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Mark. Well, I really enjoyed co-hosting with you today, and you provided some really valuable insights, I'm sure, to our listeners. And I'm sure if they have any questions, they can always comment on our podcast. And I don't think we touched on it in our introduction, but I just was going to just enlighten or to provide a little more insight to who I am.
Okay.
So my name is Darlene Parker, and I live in Canada, actually in Calgary, Alberta, and I work for a company that does Linux-based development. And so open source applications, of course, are very interesting to us, and we do try to use them as much as possible because, we have to walk the walk and talk the talk, right?
Yeah.
So we try to integrate them as much as we can into our office environment. Yeah. And, in future podcasts, I'd like to talk about Moodle, which is an open source solution that I've been using for some online training. So maybe we can talk about that in the future, Mark.
Yeah, that'll be great. I've been hearing a lot more about Moodle recently as well. I personally haven't used it, but yeah, it'd be great to get some information, and I'm sure our listeners will find it interesting as well. And thanks for joining me on the podcast and for your valuable insights and information you shared with us, Darlene. Yeah, and hope to see you next time.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much then, Mark.
Thanks, Darlene.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.